Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I'll tell you, this show is so personal to me, or a part of it is, because I had a cat that died of a very common heart disease in cats, incredibly common. And now we're turning the corner on this, and the man who is at least among those behind it, from the UK, Dr. David Connolly, will be here to explain what I'm talking about. You know, this is a question that veterinarians get maybe now more than any other question. Veterinary technicians, people who do what I do, who are behavior consultants, can CBD solve the problem? It seems no matter what the problem is, there's huge interest in this. So, you know what? I think the timing is right to speak with Dr. Jennifer Weiss of Cubbington's Cabinet on the north side on West Roscoe Street. Dr. Weiss, hi. Thank you for joining us on WGN.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, I want to start at the very beginning here. I said CBD. I assume people have heard that. But what exactly is CBD?
Well, the short answer is it is one of many cannabinoids that are in the cannabis plant. So a lot of people know about THC or marijuana. So CBD is a cousin, and it's non-intoxicating. And it is being increasingly shown in research that there's all kinds of possible health benefits with it.
All right, and it's non-psychoactive. So you're not going to get high from it. But we're not talking about people. We're talking about dogs and cats and potentially, I guess, other pets. When was it thought about that these products could be used? And but now at this point, they've begun to be used for our companion animals.
Right. I think that what happened was that humans were using it, and there was some early research that suggested in animal studies that it might be useful. The whole trigger for CBD working in the body is coming from something called the endocannabinoid system, which scientists didn't even know about until relatively recently. And dogs and other mammals have an endocannabinoid system like humans do. And so I think a lot of people were similar to me where, you know, they heard all this hype about CBD, and I had a dog that had super high anxiety and decided to give it a try.
And
it was pretty remarkable. So we had our dog on some very serious anti-anxiety medications. She's a rescue with a pretty rough backstory. So we were getting the specialized stuff that was compounded at a local pharmacy just for her, but it led to lethargy, and she wasn't she didn't have much of an appetite. So some friends suggested CBD, and I thought, well, this is a bunch of hoo-ha. And why would you even bother with that when, you know, there's THC out there and isn't that bad for dogs? But then I looked into it and thought, well, I'll give it a shot. Well, we found some CBD at a local shop. I gave it a try. And let me tell you, it changed her life and then our lives as a result.
Sure.
So once that happened, then I was on a quest to find the best CBD out there. And here we are 2 years later, and I had to start my own company for it.
All right. Now, having said all that, and I don't doubt that that's the case for your dog. In fact, I have heard from many of you, listener after listener after listener, saying that CBD has helped my dog with. And now we could fill in the blank. Everything from seizures to arthritis to anxiety issues of various kinds. And it's not only dogs. I've gotten similar notes about cats as well. But the science, Dr. Weiss, is indeed still, on the pet side, quite limited, isn't it?
It is very limited. And the few studies that there are that are peer-reviewed and double-blind have really small numbers of they're typically dogs. There is one early study with cats that I'm aware of. But the number of participants is so small. So I think we're in the early days still when it comes to really hard science.
Oh,
CBD.
We're in the really early days. Now, the good news is that for certain kinds of seizures in dogs, there was at least one study, Colorado State University, for arthritis in dogs. Dr. Joe Washlog, I think it is now published. He's quite brilliant, you know, Cornell. And that study verifies what many pet owners have anecdotally been saying, that CBD can do good for your pet. Having said that, what makes it all more complicated, not only is the science not yet completely there, but the products vary so widely, and it isn't regulated. So the industry isn't regulated. The CBD industry is what I'm talking about. And what's more is I'm the guy who stands here on the radio about flea and tick products, for example, saying, don't go to the big box store and just choose one. You'll probably choose wrong. Talk to your veterinarian first. I believe that always. But in many places, including Illinois, interestingly enough, even though you have all these shops around the corner that are selling marijuana products, the chewables and all the rest, you still can't in veterinary medicine in this state, a very state to state, cannot really talk to your veterinarian about it, at least on the record, because veterinarians and also technicians aren't supposed to talk about it. So it's really kind of messed up, isn't it?
It is. There was a recent study done on veterinarians that showed that a majority wanted more information on CBD and were very interested in talking about it and learning more about it with their colleagues, but that less than half were confident talking to their patients or the patients' humans about products. And then you add on top of it what you're talking about, which is the questionable regulations from state to state on what they're even allowed to, on the record, speak about.
All right. So let's say I want a CBD product for my dog. For, again, there are so many purposes that CBD can be used for. How does the CBD know that this dog has arthritis, then that's where I should go? Or this dog is anxious about car rides. I want to fix that. How does the CBD product? I know it's a crazy question. It's kind of, but how does it work like that?
So what's known about this endocannabinoid system, which you know is still being researched, is that we have these receptors throughout the body that are connected to the brain and the nervous system, and different cannabinoids are produced internally by the body. But we can also get them from plants. So when you're intaking a cannabinoid from CBD or THC, it's interacting with these receptors that are located throughout your body and that are actually influencing the regulation of all kinds of things, like mood and digestion and pain regulation.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on and on. Now, I think over time, it's going to be possible to get more specialized strains or combinations of cannabinoids beyond, you know, just CBD, but CBD combined with other cannabinoids that might target certain things a little better than others. But because it's early days, there isn't a lot of good sourcing for the kind of industrial hemp that's legal and that actually falls in this category. So there isn't a lot of strain differentiation. But that's sort of getting a one-size-fits-all with most CBD, if it's a quality product still to this day. But I'm hoping there's going to be more strain and formula differentiation over time.
Well, you say it's early days. Indeed it is. And it's still the Wild West out there. So you walk into a store and you do want to get something for your dog or your cat. How do you choose the right product? We'll answer that when we come back. Right here on WGN. Talking on WGN Radio with Dr. Jennifer Weiss, we're talking about CBD products for your dog or cat from Covington's Cabinet, 2015 West Roscoe. How do you know that a product is right? Because these products, Dr. Weiss, are being sold everywhere. You walk into a drugstore, a pharmacy, they are there. You walk into a gas station, they are there, or a convenience store, they're there. And then there are shops like yours that are specifically designed to sell these products. And one thing about a shop like yours is your staff can answer the questions that maybe the guy at the convenience store, a woman at the convenience store, certainly has no clue, obviously. But above and beyond that, How do you know what's right for your pet?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And that's why I started the business, because I was finding that the second and third bottles of CBD that I was buying didn't seem to be the same exact product the first time around that we were using with our own dog. And then I looked into it and realized, oh my gosh, this is unregulated. There's a lot of inconsistency with different products, quality testing. There's a lot of homework that really should go into your first purchase when it comes to CBD for your pets. And so I'll give a few key tips, but I think, you know, one of them you already pointed out. If you can go somewhere that specializes in this and you can ask questions, that's useful. And also, if you have friends or family that have used CBD successfully, you know, often that's a good place to start. But look at the label. If there is no mention of third-party testing, stay away. If there's any promise that this will cure cancer or Alzheimer's, stay away. No brand or company worth its salt will make such promises right now. It's not appropriate. Look for an FDA disclaimer. Look for health warnings. You know, just some basic things on the label along those lines. Make sure that the ingredients are clearly listed. And with those ingredients, be sure that there's actual CBD in there, because a lot of products, especially those marketed for pets, are using things like hemp extract or hemp oil.
Yep.
Well, that sounds really similar, but in actuality, that's coming from a different part of the plant. If that's what they're touting as the therapeutic quality of what's in that bottle or that product, then you are probably paying a lot of money for the equivalent of olive oil.
Have customers come into your store and said, okay, this works. I had a dog with this issue, and now I no longer do.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that happens. The anecdotes are frequent and exciting. I'll tell you that. it's fun to hear when, you know, you start a business like this.
Well, and that's a good thing. Covington's Cabinet, 2015 West Roscoe. What is your website?
Oh, it's www.covingtons.com.
Covingtons.com. Not far from Wrigley Field, so Covington's is the perfect name. Dr. Jennifer Weiss, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is incredibly common. It's a heart disease that kills far too many cats. It might be the number one cause of death in cats from about the age of 2 to about the age of 10 or 9 years of age, when kidney disease and cancers begin to happen. It's way too common, though, and we're doing something about it, and that's the good news. And here to talk about it is Dr. David Connolly with the Royal College of Veterinary Medicine in the UK, a veterinary cardiologist. And I think, Dr. Connolly, here is where we begin. What is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy?
Great. Thank you, Steve. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, as you said, is a really common disease. It can affect up to 30% of domestic short-haired cats. That's an amazing number. Obviously, I'm working in the UK, so that could be up to 1 million cats in the UK at the moment have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. When we think about US figures, that's going to be way, way more. So what is it? It's when we get this thickening of the wall of the left ventricle. That's the bottom chamber of the heart, the big pumping chamber of the heart. And when that wall becomes thicker and thicker, it really struggles to be able to work properly, to relax and contract. And that's what's required to eject blood out of the heart and around the system, around the rest of the body, you know, to feed the body with oxygen and nutrients. And so when this thickening occurs, the cats struggle in that there's increased pressure in the heart, and that can cause fluid to accumulate in the cat's lungs. And that's why some of these cats present with really horrible breathing problems. Otherwise, unfortunately, some of these cats can get a sudden death syndrome. So they get a nasty rhythm disturbance and their heart basically stops, and these cats can just suddenly die. The final thing that can happen with these cats is they get a clot forming. And this clot often goes to their back legs and causes really nasty paralysis and pain of the back legs. So all in all, it is a common and really unpleasant disease.
And that clot you mentioned, if it happens once, it is going to happen likely again and again and again. And it's a very costly thing to treat, and it's very painful for the cats as well. So I guess prevention would be the best bet, but I'm not sure there is a prevention, Dr. Connolly.
There's some work being done now, particularly for the clot. We do have blood thinners. One that we commonly use is a drug called clopidogrel, but other drugs have looked at. And there's some really nice research going on, you know, from the US. I think it's Dr. Dan Hogan who's doing this work, looking at different blood thinners to see if they are effective against a second clot forming. And we certainly use routinely these blood thinners in our cats once we've diagnosed hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And there's good evidence also from other diseases in humans that these blood thinners really help reduce the chance of a nasty clot occurring.
Now, I believe we're at a point in time right now that's really exciting because there is new research about to be launched. Psh! That's the sound of it being launched. That will determine that, wow, we will have, at some point in time, some new medications that will make a difference for these cats.
Yes, there's lots of really exciting work going on with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy at the moment. And I'm glad to say some of that is being funded by a number of research funding bodies. Amongst them are the Every Cat Health Foundation. And I personally am very grateful to that foundation for the support it's given me. At the Royal Veterinary College, we've got a big research program, and we're making a cellular model system to look at new drugs to see how that may help manage and treat this disease. In the human field, there are some really exciting drugs out there. One of them is a thing called mavacamten, quite a mouthful. That's basically an inhibitor of the proteins that are involved in the contraction of the heart. And one of the things we know about hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is basically the heart works too hard. These proteins contract to an excessive amount. And this drug, which is in phase two trials in human medicine, calms down that really fast and hard contraction of the heart. And that has been shown to be of a significant benefit in these early trials. So there's lots of exciting things going on. At the Royal Veterinary College, we're also interested in other drugs. These are drugs which work in a slightly different way, and they basically calm the heart down, but by reducing the sensitivity of the heart to an element called calcium. So it makes the heart less sensitive to calcium, and calcium is important in the contraction process. So although it works in a different way, the end result is that we hope to reduce the force of contraction of the heart. So lots of really exciting stuff going on at the moment.
This is brilliant, Dr. Connolly. Thank you so much. Learn more at everycat.org. This entire issue of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in cats means so much to me. We had a cat, some of you may remember, my piano-playing cat named Ricky. Ricky was a stark white Devon Rex cat who played the piano. Too long of a story, I think, now to tell you how it came about that a cat played a little kid's piano. But I will say that back in the day, and this goes back 20 years or more, I mean, it was before YouTube, when now you can see piano-playing cats everywhere. We started the trend, I'm certain of it. On lots of TV shows, David Letterman even said, come on, bring Ricky on. But at that point, Ricky had been diagnosed with this kind of heart disease called feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. I would not travel with Ricky, but I traveled by car, and we went down to the station once and almost knocked WGN off the air. I remember Ricky was playing his piano, and then Steve and Johnny were asking me some questions about Ricky, and Ricky was just walking around the studio. Ricky loved being out and about. And they were asking me whatever they were asking me, and Ricky's walking around and walking over the console, and in doing so, hit a button that I'm sure he didn't mean to hit. The result is we were off the air, 50,000-watt radio station, but Steve King, being Steve King and only Steve King, went bum, ba-dum, and pressed a button here and a button there and a button there, and we were back on, I think, in less than 3 seconds, but it felt like 3 days, you know? Ricky was quite amazing. And when he passed, I said, we've got to do something about this. We've got to create a fund so we can learn more about this kind of heart disease in cats. You can learn more about it at Every Cat Health Foundation. They fund studies, this organization, which I'm on the board now, and have been for many years, funding studies so we better understand this disease in cats. That's everycat.org if you want to learn more about it. Steve Dale's Pet World, we will be back next week, I can assure you, bright and early.